Hello and a very happy Monday afternoon to you. Kildare Focus on air with me, Ciara Noble, until 3 o'clock. Coming up in the next moment or two, we'll be speaking with the president of the Irish Travel Agents Association about what else but the scenes in Dublin Airport over the weekend. Refunds, rescheduling. We'll be chatting to Paul Hackett in the next couple of moments. Then we'll speak with Bara MacEagach. He's the festival director. There's a pre-ab, a pop-up Gaeltacht event taking place in Newbridge Town Hall. That is this Sunday, the 5th of June at 7 o'clock. Can you believe it? It's going to be June this week, I should be saying. Then we will speak about researchers finding that almost one-third of workers are willing to move to a new job to secure their remote working preferences, even if that means they will take a pay cut. And finally, we'll speak about Safe Food Start campaign. It's highlighting the need that parents need and want help to reduce treats, as the average monthly spend of grocery shopping on treats like biscuits, sweets, chocolate is €160, and just really out of so many people's limits at the moment in terms of the cost of living. So it'd be good to give that a review. We'll speak with Sarah O'Brien, the National Lead for the HSE's Healthy Eating and Active Living Programme, at the end of the show, about 2:45 this afternoon. But of course, I would love to hear how you're doing today. 0833 97 97 97, that is the text and WhatsApp number. Of course, you can phone in 0458 98 999 to speak with Cuiva, and you can email studio@kfmradio.com.
Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble.
Right, so everybody heard about the scenes in Dublin Airport over the weekend. Saturday in particular, I think people were expecting it to be a lot worse because there were people travelling, Leinster supporters in particular, maybe even people who aren't Leinster supporters, even Munster supporters, travelling over to Marseille for the Champions Cup final. They may have flown out of Dublin Airport. Then the same in terms of the UEFA Champions League. People may have flown out of Dublin to get over to Paris. They may have done so on the Friday or Saturday, but I think people expected that to be the time that the airport would suffer the most. But yesterday was particularly bad. And the airport authority, Dublin Airport Authority, that is, has been accused of failings in maintaining the airport facilities. Now, John Duddy here, he's a neurosurgeon, and he was flying from Dublin to work in Liverpool, obviously extremely important work he does as a neurosurgeon. And he has said that the airport was in squalor. This is what John is saying.
Not just an issue with hiring security staff at Dublin Airport, like yesterday, there weren't enough to clean the toilet and to keep the terminal in a safe and hygienic condition. So that's a complete and utter failure of management at all levels, and I think people need to be held responsible.
So clearly it's not just, you know, the wait lines at security and getting to check in, because I did hear of people literally leaving their bags there and just making sure they hopped on the plane, not even checking the bags because they knew they wouldn't have enough time. Now, the chief executive of Ryanair is Eddie Wilson, and he believes having all security gates open would ease the pressures at the airport.
They have to lock down the predictability every day that they're going to have 15 lanes open, or they open them earlier and then people will return. We had this back in Easter, and then it sort of smoothed itself out for some time, but now we're back into the peak. And if they can assure the public that they're open, I think the queuing system will work itself out.
Right, so that's the word from the chief executive of Ryanair, and a traveller who tried to get from Dublin to Liverpool, a neurosurgeon who was working over in Liverpool, and he noted it wasn't just the security lines, it was also the actual state of the airport in terms of hygiene, etc. I'm joined on the line by the president of the Irish Travel Agents Association. That is Paul Hackett. How are you today, Paul?
Hi, Ciara. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm sure you've had a very busy few days. The scenes over the weekend were quite shocking. People who missed their flights, Paul, or missed, would say certain things that they were going to do in whatever country they were travelling to. How do they get refunds? Will they get refunded? And what happens in terms of rescheduling?
Oh, like, the airport at the weekend was really a disgrace, and I think everybody's agreed on that. In terms of how people go about getting refunds, the DAA have a customer care email. I can share that with you at the end of the show, and you can put it up on your website.
100%.
In fairness to them, yesterday they came out by midday, 12 o'clock, you know, 1 o'clock news on different channels and said any out-of-pocket expenses, any rescheduling costs, overnight accommodation costs, or events that people have missed will be taken into consideration and they will look at refunding. So I think in terms of what the DAA did yesterday, they did not handle anything in the airport well. But they did come out very clearly and very honestly and put their hands up and said, this is 100% the DAA's fault, it is unacceptable, and we will cover the out-of-pocket expenses. So I think where people miss flights, had to reschedule, and where it costs money, should go through that process, should contact the customer care email address at the Dublin Airport Authority, now, and should push for their refunds.
Paul, what exactly happened? What were the exact problems? We'll touch on, you know, the squalor is how one person described the airport in terms of, you know, hygiene and the toilet. But in terms of the queues, what was the specific problem? Is it, again, not enough staff in the airport when it comes to getting through security?
Fundamentally, it is a staffing issue. And this is impacting not just the Dublin Airport Authority, but employers and businesses across Ireland and across Europe. In terms of the weekend, on Sunday, the Dublin Airport Authority reported that they were they had 50,000 passengers going through the airport on Sunday. On Saturday, they had 45,000. So not a huge increase on Sunday. And I'm still not clear as to what happened to create such scenes of chaos and such stress for people when they were trying to transit through the terminal yesterday. But if we can look at the broader piece, this is down to staffing and resourcing. Across Europe at the moment, and this is not to make any excuses for the DAA or Dublin Airport, but I can tell you that Amsterdam Airport makes Dublin Airport look reasonable. I could share with you the shots and the views of the queues.
How long are people waiting?
Outside for hours.
Now, what hours? Because we know some people were 3.5-4 hours in Dublin.
Oh, worse. This has been worse in Schiphol. This is all over Euronews. This is all over Dutch TV. KLM stopped selling flights that were departing from Amsterdam on Friday. TUI, EasyJet, BA are cancelling flights on quite an extraordinary scale at the moment, because if one member of the crew goes sick, they don't have sufficient backup crew to crew the aircraft. So BA are cancelling up to 100 flights a day, EasyJet 20 to 30 flights a day out of Gatwick. TUI had issues over the weekend, and this is down to staffing. So it is making life very difficult for the travelling public. It is not acceptable, but what it is a consequence of businesses coming back to trading post-COVID. And they're simply, they lost staff, they did not hire quickly enough, they have not rehired. We're all trying to hire staff at the moment across every sector of this economy.
Yeah, but I don't mean to be sarcastic when I say this, but I know nothing about the travel industry, and I could have put together that post-COVID, or, you know, a pandemic is still declared, we know that, but people are trying to get out and about and travel more, and it's obvious that that would have happened. So if the general public can understand that, how could these big businesses not realise that that was going to happen?
And that's the problem. You know,
I'm not looking for you per se, but there has to be an answer to that, Paul.
But that's where the challenge is, Ciara, because if you look at it, Ryanair did not experience problems yesterday. Aer Lingus did not experience problems yesterday. Aer Lingus had problems on Friday when their website, their systems went down. But by and large, the two primary airlines that fly most of the passengers out of this country were able to function yesterday, and the Airport Authority was not able to function yesterday. So it is very hard to pinpoint where the problem lies, because it's not all parts of the travel industry that are failing in this regard. It is some parts of the travel industry are failing. And organisational structures are difficult to move quickly. And the DAA had this problem back in March and April. Like, I had travelled through Dublin Airport 5 times in the last 6 weeks. The queues were bad. They were nothing like at the weekend. I didn't experience anything like that. So for anybody who experienced that at the weekend, I can't imagine what they had to go through. But in real terms, we understood that they had got their act together, they had put a task force in place, they were moving staff from their back office into the security areas to do some of the non-security tasks that are being managed at the airport. But as I say, this, if we want to just look at what the problem is staffing.
So you're mentioning their refunding, I asked you at the beginning, and you're talking about DAA, and one of the ways you worded it is that they'll look at refunding? You know, it's a case-by-case basis, I'm sure. Can they afford what they possibly are going to have to pay out?
I think so. I think they've no choice. They were very clear yesterday. This was their fault, nobody else's fault. There were significant obstacles for consumers who had booked and paid for their flights to get through the terminal to get to the boarding gate. The passengers' responsibility is to present themselves at the airport on time and to get to the boarding gate on time. We all know that. It is the airport's responsibility to facilitate that transit through the airport. And the DAA did not do that yesterday.
So then
they cannot come out like on a Saturday, on a Sunday, and then again on a Monday with clarity around the refund piece and then not follow up on that. I don't believe that's what they will do. I believe they're good to their word with regard to this. I think they recognise that they have let people down significantly badly. We don't need this for inbound traffic into Ireland, for outbound traffic, like for visitors who were returning to their home countries yesterday. It was a really bad display of Ireland Inc. And for Irish citizens who have not had a holiday for 2 years and not left the country for 2 years, it was a horrendous position for them to be in. So,
Paul, you're mentioning a passenger responsibility there. So obviously in terms of the airplane itself, it is up to the passenger to make sure they turn up on time, which, you know, majority of people did, et cetera, et cetera. But what if I am somebody who's bought a ticket for the UEFA Champions League in Paris? What if I'm somebody who has gone through yourselves at the ITAA and organised certain bookings? Will DAA also cover that?
They will have to. That's what they said yesterday, and that's what they have said they will do, Ciara. So, we will be holding them to their word. And in fairness, since this issue arose in March and April, they have been focused entirely on trying to resolve the issues. These issues are staffing, are resource-led. They've got to fix it. We can't have, our capital city and our primary airport in this country operating as it was yesterday. But I'll happily share with you, and you can put on your website, what's coming from Reuters, what's coming from Euronews, what's coming from the UK Times and The Guardian and The Independent around BA, EasyJet, TUI,
Amsterdam I've just looked
airport,
up Schiphol Airport there a few moments ago myself, and I can see there were crazy scenes in Amsterdam. But if staffing is the problem, DAA yesterday called it a blip. 1,000 people or 1,000 passengers missed their flights yesterday. That's all well and good to say, you know, we disgrace the nation, whatever words they used, right, brilliant. But what is happening? That is now what people need to know, because they don't feel confident enough to say, right, I'm flying out of Dublin next Friday.
I know, and we have it ourselves. We have our own staff travelling this week. We have all of our customers travelling this week. They're all very anxious. Every travel agent in the country has customers who are anxious. As I said, it's 2 years since most people have left the country. This is the last thing they need. We don't need the hassle with our passports and getting new passports for newborn kids. We don't need this hassle at Dublin Airport. So both of those bodies need to get their act together and remove the friction for the consumer. This is not fair in terms of the service delivery piece.
Okay, well, Ryanair is calling for the army to be brought into Dublin Airport. Again, that chief executive that I was speaking about, Eddie Wilson, he says calling in the army will resolve the problem. What do you think in terms of that, Paul?
I think, I can't go back. It's a staffing issue. However this can be resolved in terms of getting hands on deck has to be looked at.
Okay.
You know, so if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. So, you know, it can be nothing else, Ciara. There was insufficient people to man security, to open the security lanes, to manage the queues. It wasn't the customer's fault. You know, it was a resourcing issue and a staffing issue. And resourcing and staffing issues are not quick fixes at the moment. And that is a separate issue for so many of us in this country.
Yeah, and so many different industries, as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview, Paul, not just the travel industry. Listen, thank you very much for taking your time this afternoon. That is the president of the Irish Travel Agents Association. So DAA are saying, in terms of refunds, rescheduling, whether it was your plane ride, your villa, your apartment, an event you were going to, they're saying they're going to be refunding people. As Paul worded it, they'll be looking at refunding. How long that will take, obviously we don't have the answers to that as of yet. We've heard from early this morning that things seem to be running more smoothly. That's more smoothly, not necessarily just smoothly, more smoothly than yesterday. They called yesterday Dublin Airport Authority a blip. 1,000 approximately passengers missed their flights yesterday, being forced to queue both outside and inside of the terminal buildings. And I wonder what foreign tourists did think about the situation yesterday. It must have been madness.
Kildare Focus with Ciarán Noble.
So believe it or not, June is coming. It's nearly here. It's going to be here on Wednesday. I actually can't believe that. The year has really gone by so quickly. And if you're a resident of Newbridge or you're somebody who likes the town, you'll know that the June Fest happens every year in Newbridge. And some of the upcoming highlights from this year's June Fest, which will be taking place in Newbridge from the 1st of June to the 30th, do include the Monster Family Fun Day that's happening at St. Connaught's GAA Park next Sunday. That is the 6th of June from 12 p.m. Bark in the Park with the KWW SPCA. We'll be speaking with them later in the week. That's in Liffey Linear Park, as you can imagine. It has something to do with your dogs. And the Georgia Street Party, which is taking place on the 4th and 5th of June at 1 o'clock. They're just some of what is happening. But something a little bit different that is happening in the next week, 7 days or so, is a pop-up pre-ab, a pop-up Gael Tocht event. And Barra McCookie joins me now. He is the festival director. I appreciate you taking the time, Barra. How are you doing today?
Yeah, keeping good. Yeah, and yourself?
I'm not too bad. I did have a little bit of a trouble with the pronunciation of the surname, but did I do okay?
Yeah, I did okay.
Okay,
thanks very much.
I did okay.
Much appreciated.
So this Sunday is the 5th of June, so at 7 o'clock this pop-up Gael Tocht event is happening. Tell us more, Barra.
Yeah, 7 o'clock in the town hall in Newbridge. So it's just with, there's a new language group that I'm involved with called Glora and Curry. So we're just trying to promote the language in the Newbridge, Kildare, kind of Kilcullen, around the Curra area. We haven't had much chance to do much with the pandemic, and also we're back trying to organise a few events just to give people a chance to listen to Irish and to talk Irish just in very relaxed, try not to be scary at all and just be very welcoming and just encourage people to kind of to like the language and love the language and use it, give them a chance to use it. So the pop-up Gael Tocht it's what I'm trying to do is just to bring together, there's a lot of different groups that are working on Irish in the area. So the idea is just to try and bring all those groups, as many of those groups as I can, together, just so that those people are there to talk about the work they're doing and have a bit of a display. And then there's going to be some music and some Illan piping as well. We have two Illan pipers coming along, and there'll be a display from the Peabody Illan, who run courses on making the pipes as well. So there'll be people from the course on making the pipes and some pipes to look at and to try out. And then there'll be some people playing the pipes as well.
Okay, very cool. That's very interesting, yeah. Especially how they make the instrument. So you don't have to be fluent in Irish. As you say, don't be scared, because people like me who really want to be fluent in Irish and really want to speak Irish, I think the first thing that comes to my head is something like the Mochanilach, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what the Mochanilach is. But that's not what's going to be happening on Sunday.
No, the first thing that says in any of the publicity we put out is Falchery of Gaelic Avrishta, which is just welcome before broken Irish. Broken Irish is welcome here. So we just want to make everyone feel comfortable and kind of get over all of the baggage about the fears about the Mochanilach and the Tishil Ginnadach and all that stuff.
It just reminds you of school, the fear you had, or reminds you of going to the Gael Tocht, and you know, it was like, if you speak one word of English, you're out, and you know, your parents have spent this much money to send you to the Gael Tocht, and you've spoken a word of English. So I think people have this like hypersensitivity and anxiety about trying to speak Irish, because it goes back to like their schooling or their Gael Tocht days.
Yeah, and then I mean, this, my friend Darrell Matthew, there's a lot of baggage with the language, and I guess going back hundreds of years, you can get into all the decolonialism and all sorts of stuff with it. I mean, it's all a lot of very heavy stuff, and I mean, all it is just a language, like, and like French or like German, and it's you know, it's just a way of talking to each other, and I guess the fact that it's our language and how old it is, and just the huge connection it has with all the place names and all the family names. Is, I mean, there's such a richness with the language, and when you start to try and connect with it, how much it, for personally speaking, how much it helps me connect with just the countryside around me and where I live, and you know, all that wealth is there to dig into if you are interested and if you can have a good association with the language. Yeah.
I think we're all interested, genuinely, and it sounds like a really good event that's happening at Newbridge Town Hall on Sunday, 5th of June. It's part of the June Fest, and Barra is the festival director there, Barra McCookie. So the pre-ab, that means pop-up. The pre-ab Gwael Talked event is taking place on Sunday, 5th of June, 7 o'clock. Head down, and if you want some more information, do go to Newbridge June Fest website, and they have everything there. Or you can also email Barra, that's newbridgejunefest@gmail.com. to find out some more information. Thanks so much, Barra. Now, researchers from the Whitaker Institute at NUI Galway and the Western Development Commission, they have revealed that almost one third of workers are willing to move to a new job to secure their remote working preferences, even if this means that they face a pay cut. Now, Deirdre Frost is a member of the Western Development Commission policy team, and she is one of the report's authors. She joins me now. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for joining me. I think what I was, you know, there's some main findings we'll go through in a moment, but what I was most surprised by is even if people will face a pay cut, they're going to change their job to make sure these remote working preferences are kept.
Yes, Ciara. I mean, it's really fascinating findings, and I suppose what's interesting for us is this is the first time we've done, so this is the third year we've done this survey, but the first time where we don't have COVID workplace restrictions. So before, when we conducted the survey, there was various restrictions whereby people had to work from home. This is the first time where people have a choice, essentially, and it's very clear that people still want to remote work. And as you say, not only do they want remote work, they'd actually look for a different job if they couldn't, or indeed, as you say, look at a pay cut. I mean, the pay cut is interesting in that, obviously, we asked that question this time, but if you dig deeper, I suppose one of the big issues that we found over every survey is that one of the main drivers for people wanting to remote work is to avoid the commute.
Yeah.
And if you consider commuting can be expensive, not only in terms of your time, but in terms of filling your car with fuel, or indeed public transport costs, and they're obviously going up now. So that can probably be in people's mindset in terms of the trade-off, both in terms of the time saved and the commuting costs.
Yeah, so it's 8,400 employees that were surveyed in late April and early May, and this is their current experience of remote working. You mentioned it there about travelling to work. So many people here in County Kildare don't travel that far time-wise to get to the capital city, but due to the huge rush of people who do live and or leave the county and travel to the same areas of Dublin for the same time, it means that so many of our listeners are stuck in traffic for a huge amount of time. 30% of the respondents indicated they spent 30 minutes to an hour of the time they saved commuting working. 27% spent up to half an hour, and 14% 1 to 1.5 hours. When you look at the M7 and sometimes the M4 here in Kildare, you can end up being on it one way for like 2 hours, 3 hours if there's an accident, and on a normal day when it's not rush hour, you could literally be there for 30 minutes. So quite clearly, 49% of people, as your survey has found, believe that remote working has no impact on opportunities for promotion. 33% are not yet knowing the impact. 9% believe there is a positive impact, while 9% believe there is a negative impact on promotion opportunities. So much less in terms of the negative side of what potentially has come out of remote working.
Absolutely. And I suppose really, that's probably a pandemic effect in that so many people had to remote work, including employers. So for the last 2 years, people who have never done remote work had to, and they also realised it works. So that maybe helps the idea that actually you realise that you should be able to get promoted, whether you're face-to-face with your boss in the office, or indeed face to face on a screen now and again when you're remote working. The other interesting thing, which is in the full report, which is available on our website westerndevelopment.ie, is that we looked at the counties where people have relocated to. So one of our big issues in the Western Development Commission is to what extent remote working can help people consider maybe moving back to where they're where they're originally from or moving to a different area if they can remote work. What was really interesting this time, we did this last year and now this year, we asked the question, where did you really, of those who have relocated, where did you relocate to? And Kildare was in the top three counties. 7.7% of people have relocated to Kildare, which is actually really positive for Kildare.
I mean, not if you're trying to buy a house.
Well, that's true too. And we didn't ask questions about house prices.
I'm only joking. Yeah, no, we know there has been such a big, but so 7.7, is that what you said?
So we asked for the top 10 counties. In the report, we listed the top 10 counties where people that have already relocated during the pandemic, where they've relocated to. And Kildare is number three.
And
first county
have
is Galway, the second is Cork, and then Kildare is number three.
And did you have any follow-ups in terms of whys?
Pardon me?
In terms of whys, as in why they have moved to a certain county?
No. And,
okay.
And what I am intending to do is doing further data analysis on the data set to try and figure out who those people are, getting a better information, which will help understand the why. And that research will follow. We'll put it up on our website when it's done.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. I'm on your website actually currently. And the findings from the respondents, 8,400 employees, 52% are currently working, or were at the time, currently working hybrid, 40% fully remotely, and only 8% were fully on site. I was very surprised by that, Deirdre.
Yes, again, it's you're adding to my to-do list. That's another thing I need to dig deeper to understand who those people are. My informed guess would suggest that those are people whereby their employer is expecting them to be fully on site.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, okay. So, and maybe in cases of things like, you know, the tradespeople, the construction side of things, and we can understand, obviously, they do need to be on site, as one can imagine. It's incredibly interesting. I don't mean to be adding to your workload. I'm just very interested into the reasons behind this. But you can get more information, as Deirdre said, on the Western Development Commission's website. Deirdre's a member of the policy team. And just to bring you another couple of stats or findings here, 37% indicated that they will change the job, and 27% they're open to the possibility of changing it, even if it means less promotion opportunities. 49% of respondents clock more hours. So, like, I mean, employers might be happier with this. They clock more hours while remote working, which is something people definitely need to work on. You don't want to get overwhelmed with your remote working. And almost half, as I mentioned a few moments ago, don't believe it will have an impact on opportunities for promotion. Thank you, Deirdre. Really appreciate that. As I said, Deirdre Frost is a member of the Western Development Commission policy team, and she's also one of the report's authors. And you can head on to the Western Development Commission website to find out more information. So Kildare, the third most, wanted county to go to in terms of moving during the pandemic and remote working. People may have or may be familiar with the Start campaign. It's a safe food campaign, and it's highlighting to parents they're wanting to help reduce treats as a monthly spend by families. On average, believe it or not, gets up to €160. We're spending this money on treats like crisps, chocolate and biscuits. It was during April 2022, so just over a month ago. And the Start campaign from Safe Food, the HSE and Healthy Ireland, it's encouraging parents to take step towards a healthier family lifestyle by reducing the amount of treats you give one's child. Joining me to discuss this is Sarah O'Brien. She's the National Lead for the HSE's Healthy Eating and Active Living Programme. Good afternoon to you, Sarah.
Good afternoon, Kira, and thank you very much for having me.
I greatly appreciate you joining me. Now, Sarah, the first thing I would probably say to this is it's April 2022 figures, 2 years really after a pandemic, and it seems as if during the pandemic people did use maybe foods and, you know, their TV shows, etc., as crutches to get themselves through such a difficult time, and they would have leaned on things a little bit more than they would have previously to to give them a bit of joy, I guess, when we're going in and out of lockdowns and infection numbers. It was an awful lot for people to cope with. So one can imagine why they may have indulged their sweet tooth.
Yeah, absolutely, Ciara. Look, we know from our own research with parents over the last 2 years of COVID as part of the START campaign that it has been a very challenging time for them. And they have recognised themselves that certain things have maybe slipped or changed or stepped back a bit, but they are keen to get things back on track. And that's really where the START campaign comes in, because we're very much about supporting parents to make and persist with the small changes that will make a really big difference to their children's health and well-being overall. And very much at the moment we're focusing on the area of treats, because as you said, like the most recent research there for the campaign on Kantar data was showing that almost a fifth of the grocery budget has been spent on treat foods. And when we compare that to 2018, I suppose the last set of data we have on this for the campaign, spend on treats is up, but interestingly the spend on fruit and veg is down, which is a little bit worrying. But you know, parents are keen to make a change, and that's what we're all about supporting them with. And look, we know, I suppose, that the cost of food and is rising. So everyday items like bread and milk, there's been significant jumps around them. The price of treat foods hasn't seen the same jump. But very interestingly, from the CSO data, the cost of fruit and vegetables hasn't gone up significantly neither. So increasing and switching over to fruit and vegetables isn't going to be an additional burden, really, to families. So we are encouraging parents to talk about the small changes they can make and see what they can do. We know it may be a little bit difficult, but there are lots of practical tips and advice on our website makeastart.ie, from tips on how to reduce treats, what healthy snacks maybe to swap in, but also really useful videos from parenting experts in terms of how to have the conversation, how to say know a little bit more, and how to redirect focus and engage children in the changes as well. So we're really hoping that those pieces will support parents.
You mentioned there a fifth of the weekly household grocery amount that a family would spend, or a monthly, goes on the treat. 21% spent on foods like biscuits, crisps and chocolate. Now, €49 on average was spent on fruit and €37 on vegetables. A big difference. And it is true in saying that the fruit and veg has not seen a massive increase in terms of the cost of living, because we know things like the breads, the pastas, sauces, etc., they are seeing a jump, and it does make a difference to people, especially those who may have allergies to certain foods.
We know that there is often a perception that fruit and veg and healthier choices are more expensive, but they're not.
Well, this is what I was just about to ask you, Sarah, right? I know myself, I sometimes go into the grocery store and I'm thinking, okay, you know, maybe I don't need this many, would say, carrots, and it comes in a bag. And nowadays as well, people are so conscious of being environmentally friendly that they would like to go for things, would say, maybe in loose veg. You know, they're not buying the packaging. But you're comparing the loose veg to the packaging. And I think that, I don't know if I mightn't be right on this, but I think that actually has a big impact on people then putting veg into their cart.
We do know from research that the cost of wasted food or the sense of food being wasted is something that does put them off. So definitely choosing loose veg or fruit, you know, picking up three or four apples rather than the six pack, when you know that, you know, you'll get through the three or four apples in the couple of days, rather than at the end of the week looking at them in the bowl and thinking, you know, I'm going to be throwing those out. So it is about changing how we shop a little bit, and the supermarkets are more and more providing the option of loose veg and fruit for people to pick up. And I think the other, like, we have a really good cooking program, Healthy Food Made Easy, that's run in many communities across the country. And what that does is it helps people with cooking skills. So very often you may have veg in the fridge at the end of the week, but it's not gone off enough to go in the bin or to compost. But you can quite relatively simply use it to make a vegetable soup, a fresh homemade vegetable soup, which is really, really nutritious, and because the veg is there, very, very cheap as well.
Sarah, we know that, you know, the food industry will have a lot of money to advertise, promote, market their products. Of late, in the past few years, there's no longer the I guess crisps, sweets, chocolate at the cash register, the checkout in supermarkets, etc. But it doesn't seem as if that has made much of a difference over the past 2 years in terms of the amount we are spending on those treats. So what next for parents who have tried their best to, I guess, you know, avoid the sweet aisles, etc.? What's the advice for them going forward?
Yeah. Well, I suppose, look, we there are guidance for the industry around sweet-free checkouts, and that some supermarkets are and two chains are better than others at it. So definitely I would suggest a parent look where they're shopping and shop where it supports you to make the healthier choice easier. If industry were also investing half as much money in promoting the fresh fruit and veg and healthier options that they do in the treat foods, which are generally higher in fat, salt and sugar, I think it would make a huge difference. Price promotions, etc., like, it does make a difference when you're looking at your budget and your bottom line at the end of the week. I suppose the very starting one is plan before you go shopping. If you agree what treats you're getting or what levels of treats you're purchasing before you go shopping, it reduces the chance of things just ending up in your trolley. The less that's in the trolley, the less that comes home, and the less that's there for temptation during the week. There are other tips like
never shop when you're hungry.
Well, never shop when you're hungry, absolutely. It is the worst
it
time
is.
To shop.
Absolutely. I have fallen.
And especially
victim.
Don't bring hungry children with you when you're shopping as well. I know that one from experience. But there's also, I suppose, there's kind of habits we get into at home in terms of we can often use treat foods as a reward or an encouragement for our children and ourselves. So I suppose it's around looking at what we're doing there and seeing if we can swap that out for non-food related treats, whether that's a trip to the park or even something as simple as, you know, like 10 minutes. Joining your kids for 10 minutes outdoors playing ball or skipping or that, you know, spending time with them can make a difference.
Absolutely.
It's amazing what becomes a treat.
Okay, well, if anybody is looking for more information, Sarah did mention it a moment ago, you can find the practical tips and advice at makeastart.ie. You may have heard some of the advertising also. So it's makeastart.ie. And if I go into some of the data here in terms of our current food prices, 62% of people are expected to cut back on the amount of food they buy because of inflation. This is the latest study from Kantar, and it's showing the cost of living is a key concern for 81% of Irish consumers. In the past 3 months, grocery sales did decrease by 6.5%, while ahead of this long weekend coming, the sales of burgers and sausages, they actually increased by 2%. I guess people are expecting to get the barbecues out. But as Sarah was noting, because of the rise of inflation and the cost of living, double check how much you're spending each month on the treats and each week, however often you do your budget, because this could make a big difference to you. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Sarah O'Brien, National Lead for the HSE's Healthy Eating and Active Living Programme. Take care. Your music, your station, KFM. That's it for Monday's Kildare Focus. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Ball's up next with K-Drive Gold, and I'll be speaking with you again in the morning from 9. Take care.